It is such a pleasure to be with Millie Monks here at her beautiful home in Cape Elizabeth, Maine. I'm Paula Gordon, and I am your guest. Thank you for being my guest. We'll dance together. Dance is a very important part of your life, as all the arts are. And I wonder, thinking about this youngster who would come, what were you, 7, 8, 9, 10? Your father was not only at the war, but he was in the war for 6 or 7 years he was away. So you really didn't see your father.
No.
So there's no male figure in that for all intents and purposes.
No.
Were there men at the school? Did you have uncles? Did you have grandparents? Or were the men absent through that part of your growing up?
I think my brother was at the war too, so they were absent.
So it was you and your mom.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, memory is a funny thing. It really is. So you have to be somewhat humble about what you remember and what horrified you and what scared you and what did work for you. So
it's also, I think, important to say that when you say psychic, if one has grown up under that sort of extreme condition, don't you get more attuned in different ways, perhaps?
I think that's what makes you psychic. I really think you're really onto something. I do think so. I kept telling everybody that all this Iranian-Iraqi business was going to happen, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years before it did, and people get very upset. You get into the Cassandra complex. You upset people.
They don't want to hear it.
They don't want to hear it.
And yet you had the courage, it seems to me courage, to, how was it? Was it to have your horoscope examined?
Oh, right.
What led you to do that, and what did you learn from it, and to the good, to the bad? I mean, I've always been fascinated. Why do people have horoscopes read? What do they learn? How seriously do they take it? How does it inform their lives? I don't have the nerve to ask what's ahead, frankly.
Really?
Well, it's like
that's one of the problems of being psychic. You can get fearful of learning.
How did you come into that experience with the horoscope? Was that part of dealing with the stresses?
No. Well, I think it started because the gentleman across the street who wrote the definitive book on the Muslim people was a professor at Harvard who did horoscopes. And he started it off because he came over and knocked on the door.
And you were locked up in your room.
This was when I was married and had children. And we were in Cambridge and he was living across the street. So he started it off. He wanted to read my horoscope.
And
he said I would never sing. And I was just starting to sing. I was at the conservatory as a special student and singing around town. Actually got into the soloist department at Tanglewood and lost my voice. So I never got there.
Physically lost it? Mm-hmm. Psychically lost
probably,
it?
Probably.
Psychologically.
Whatever, yeah.
That's what I was dreaming about all night. I told you I would tell you what my dreams were last night.
Yeah.
I read late into the night to finish reading stories from Three Islands. And so through the course of the night, I was assigned in the morning. I was going to, by evening, I had to have the not the lead role, but the secondary lead role in the opera that they had yet to give me the score.
Right.
So I didn't know what the melody was or the words, and the curtain was going up in 20 minutes.
Oh, man. That was pretty quick.
I was dreaming about you, Millie Monks.
Oh, dear. Sorry about that.
Yeah, well, your basic anxiety dream. Was that a loss to you when that fellow said that? Did that help you foreshorten what you thought was going to be a career?
Well, I did want to be a singer in the worst sort of way, but what a hard life it is. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. And I did, you know, Sarah Caldwell, I was in her chorus, which was fun, professional chorus, but, yeah.
And she said of you as a mezzo?
She said I was had tremendous potential. But, not to sing was a terrible blow. Because I love music, and that's part of what sustained me here.
Say more about that. sustained you here in Maine?
No, on this strange place I'm in.
You mean the planet?
All you people seem to be so comfortable with. What's the matter with you all?
That's the illusion, is that the rest of us are comfy.
I know. But
how is it that music is so important? Just to you. You don't have to make a general... I'm not asking for the big the big answer for all of humanity or the music of the spheres.
No.
Are you simply tuned into it? Is that the way you're wired? Is that the way
it's,
you...
It's, in a way, it's like meditation for me. It's tremendously calming. And I like the minor keys because they pull something out of me that makes me write better. And I can forgive, as I think I said in the book, I can forgive anybody anything if the music is really beautiful. But then when it stops, I'm not so sure.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you use the word forgive, because it seems to me that much of your story is to both explore and look bravely and truthfully at hard realities.
Yeah.
Name them, put the antiseptic of light and recognition on them, and then do the forgiving. And it seems that you have your own peace in having gone through that process. And maybe you couldn't have gotten to this joyful face without the full...
And I misused the word forgiving. I got into big trouble at the seminary with this because I said... I can't forgive anybody. What right do I have to forgive anybody? I mean, I can try to understand them, or I had another word, compassion, maybe, not forgive. I haven't the right to forgive anybody. I'm business forgiving myself.
That's wonderful.
If I can do that.
That it's all,
which I think is part of the end of the book. I've begun, I suppose I have begun to forgive or have some compassion for myself, finally.
And you talked about going inward. If you haven't done that for yourself, how can you possibly do it for anyone else?
Yes.
It's all, if I'm hearing you rightly, it's almost as if you're saying, there's an audacity. How dare I?
Yes.
Is that for a higher something or other to do the forgiving, call it what one will?
Yes, I mean, well, what do we know about what somebody else has been through? Especially if you've been attached to mental illness at all, you have no idea what's going on in their brain. So to forgive them is so high-hatted. It's amazing the pain they've been going through. Yeah. And
that pain... isn't just their pain.
No.
They share the pain.
They do.
And it's in much of what I found truly laudable in your willingness to tell these stories is your willingness to say that it was a tremendous rupture in every part of your life to have both a mother and a daughter, and then one generation back and perhaps one generation forward beyond, to be living with deep illness, where if any of these people had had cancer, it'd be
totally different.
So it's almost twice grievous damage.
Yes.
They both are suffering and causing suffering, and it's somehow shameful.
Yes, to boot.
Has any of that social what's the word even? How is it that you feel people relate to mental illness? You tell me, what is it about mental illness that people won't talk about it?
Well, I never used to tell people what I did if they asked me. I just said, you know, something. But when I started writing this book, I thought, well, I'll tell people I'm writing a book about mental illness. I heard some people couldn't stop talking. I heard the most terrible stories. Other people, they would just, you know, turn away. They couldn't deal with it. They couldn't talk about it.
But those who could, how did they?
It was horrendous, the stories I heard. Just horrendous. I mean, some mothers didn't make it, you know, just couldn't survive it. I mean, it's just terrible.
And they were able to open up to you with their stories because you were telling?
Because I said my book is about mental illness in my family, among the women in my family, and that was as if, oh my God, I can actually talk about it. You know, or somebody would say, can we have lunch? And then I'd find out something about them that I had no idea. And it was so wonderful to be able to talk about it with somebody.
You and your husband started a, if I understand correctly, a mental health support group here in Maine. Was that healing for you as well as for the others? Did you think you were going to get more than you and Bob and two other folk? And then lots came? How did that?
We had quite a good group, as I remember. That's a long time ago, but it was sort of, I think, one of the first groups like that for parents. And then we've, especially Bob, has been involved with a children's place for mental illness. And
mental illness does not pass anybody by.
No, it really doesn't. We have five members of our family, young people, on this our family here, who have been mentally ill. Seriously, some of them.
That begins to argue for looking for genetic patterns, doesn't it?
Yes, I think so.
It wouldn't somehow be the same if you were saying that five young people had hypertension.
No.
That five young people had acne, that
no.
Serious skin problems.
You can still hug them.
And you can't hug people who are mentally ill?
I think it probably depends on the illness. With borderline personality, there's so much anger that sometimes that's very hard. And then sometimes it stops for a while and you can sort of make a little, you know, communication again. But if the drinking gets involved with a mental illness.
So when one puts alcohol, other kinds of drugs into an already distressed system. It what happens?
It's explosive. There's no reins on the person. So they don't know what they're doing anymore.
And yet they do. I don't mean that they do know. I mean they act out.
Yes.
They don't know what they're doing, but then they go out and do things.
Yes, and then they end up in jail, and then they get out of jail, and nobody can keep them in jail. Nobody can keep them in an institute, because you can't do that either. I mean, unless, I don't know, maybe it's a little different today, but very hard to put somebody in an institution today.
There was a big change, wasn't there? Once upon a time, institution was the answer.
Yes.
And then that, we set the doors open and forced people out who perhaps needed some boundaries.
Yes.
Let's take a quick break. This idea of boundaries, I think, is an important one. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Paula Gordon. Millie Monks has done me the honor to join me in conversation, and we will continue it in a moment.